Good evening, everybody. Shmuel Plotzker coming at you live from Cincinnati, Ohio. Golf Manor Synagogue and our School of Jewish Studies. And boy, oh boy, has it been a long time. This is just unbelievable when you think about it. According to my Sefer, the last time that we had a meeting on the phone was way back August 28th. Because then the Yom Tovim started kicking in. Rosh Hashanah and then Yom Kippur. And then Chveis, the first day of Sukkot, and then you had Chveis Shmini Atzeres, and then we had to come back. Oh my goodness! I mean, like this is like, you know, it's been a month. So if you're with us today, that is great. We're delighted that you are. We thank you for being here, and we're going to continue our Torah study, and hopefully going to learn a Torah in honor of the Refuah Shleimah of so many people who are ill. May they all have a Refuah Shleimah, including Yosef Ben Bela and so many, many others. If you have anybody in mind that you'd like to have, that this Torah study should boost that individual's neshama or increase that person's Refuah Shleimah chances, we certainly invite you to have that in Zinah, have that in mind. And with that, without further ado, we're going to begin on chapter 7, where we left off on August 28th, 7th chapter, and we finished the first 5 psukim. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to read them in English and put everybody on the same page. So that'll be good. Chapter 7, verses 1 through 5. Shlomo built his house 13 years, and he finished all his house. Verse 2, he built the house of the forest of Lebanon. 100 cubits was its length, 50 cubits its breadth, and 30 cubits its height, on 4 rows of cedar pillars, and cut beams of cedar upon the pillars. Verse 3, and it was covered with cedar above on the walls, which were on 45 pillars, 15 in each row. Verse 4, and there were windows in 3 rows, and each window was opposite the other window 3 times. Verse 5, and all the entrances and posts were square, also the window, and each window was opposite the other window 3 times. And that's where we ended a month ago. So let's begin taking a look at verse 6. Ve'as ulam ha'amudim asa chamishim ama arko ishloshim ama rochbo. And he made the porch of pillars. 50 cubits was its length, and 30 cubits was its breadth. Ve'ulam al p'neim, and a porch was before them. Ve'amudim v'av al p'neim, and pillars and thick beams were before them. You know what, friends? This is going to be very much like chapter 6. Chapter 6 was architecturally driven. Chapter 7, I looked it over, all 45 or so verses. It's not going to be much less that way. It's going to be also very architecturally driven. And we're going to be introduced to the house that Shlomo built. So hopefully we'll all be able to stay awake for most of it, and we'll enjoy whatever we can. And here we go. That was verse 6. He made the porch of pillars 50 cubits long, 30 cubits broad, and a porch before them, and pillars and thick beams before them. Take a look at the footnotes and the translation. And the porch of pillars, he's going to quote down a Rashi, he made a porch before these pillars as an entrance to the house. Excuse me. Its length was 50 cubits along the width of the house, which was also 50 cubits, and 30 cubits its width before the extent of the length of the house, only that the longer measurement is always called the length, and the shorter one is called the width. And that is his Rashi commentary. And there's another Rashi, and there was a porch before them, the ulam al pneim. There was a porch before them. In addition, he quotes Rashi, he made a high porch around the entire house. Okay? And pillars and thick beams before them. And on the cut beams of cedar, which were no lower pillars, he erected still more pillars and joists from pillar to pillar, the pillars to connect walls from one to the other, and the joists to cover the ceiling. The word ov, the ov al paneim, the word ov in the pasuk, he says ov means a joist, as we learn in the Gemara Baba Kama 67a, and the ubim there, these are the joists. The ubim are the joists. All that was Rashi. Welcome, everybody.
What word do you use, joist?
Joist.
What does that mean?
It's an architectural term that builders use. I think that it's a term that utilizes, that combines things, that causes things to stay connected, a joist. Mitsudas maintains that these were pillars driven into the earth, joined at the top by thick joists to keep them together, either for the sake of beauty or as a wall and guard. Pasuk 7, Zion. V'ulam ha-kisei asher yishpocham ulam ha-mishpat asa. And he made a porch for the throne where he might judge. Ulam ha-mishpat asa, the porch of judgment. The safun ba-erez, and it was covered with cedar, mehakarka ad hakarka, from one side of the floor to the other side of the floor. And as we said a moment ago, this chapter is also going to be architecturally driven, just like the previous one. We know how much we enjoyed chapter 6. We're going to enjoy chapter 7 no less. See the translation and the commentary footnote, verse 7, a porch for the throne. He's going to quote down a radak, the porch of judgment and the porch for the throne are one and the same, says the radak. Or as the Targum says, a porch to set the throne of judgment to judge there. He made a vestibule to the house of judgment there. And if you take a look at the Targum, V'ulama l'askana tamon kursei beistina d'da'in tamon pusta l'beistina. And he's going to say over here, Rashi is going to say that a pusta is an expression of prosdor, a vestibule. So you see the word pusta, you should be thinking prosdor, a vestibule. There were then two porches, and here comes a malbim at you. There were, therefore, two porches. The porch for the throne was for the use of the king in judging important matters, whereas the porch of judgment was for the use of the Sanhedrin and for the litigants to stand there before the porch of the throne. That's the Malbim.
This just goes to support. There's something that I've pointed out several times, and we've worked with it, right? That there were two legal systems in the time of the ancient Jewish monarchy. There was Mishpat HaTorah HaPi Sanhedrin, and there was also the Mishpat HaLuchah, the Sanhedrin, the regular legal high courts and the lower courts. And then there was the royal prerogative to judge as he saw deemed appropriate. So it makes sense that there would be two different places, two different types of judicial procedures.
Thank you very much. That is very good. I thank you for pointing that out for us, Rabbi Berloff. And so is it fair to say that when the two women with the babies came in, or with the baby, when they came in to get judgment, how do we think it worked? Did the Sanhedrin just kind of defer that to the king? Did the king grab that case on his own? Do we know? Did he want to just rule on his own in order to establish himself? Obviously, it's conjecture, I guess, on our part. But we know one thing. There was probably a Sanhedrin sitting somewhere, and the king took it upon himself to rule on that matter. And I find that fascinating. And he established his name. He wanted to let people know, we got somebody over here who's special. He's got some insight, and he's going to lay it out. It was a fascinating case, and it goes down into the world literature like that. Everybody knows about that famous Solomonic decision. Okay, here, Shekriach. There were two porches. There were two places for judgment. There was a king who judged important matters in the Sanhedrin. Shekriach. And it was covered with cedar. So says the Pasuk. That the floor, the Safun Ba'erez, it was covered, the porches were covered with cedar from one side of the floor to the other side of the floor. Says Rashi, the earth of the floor was covered with cedar from one side, and here Targum Yonason renders this from foundation to foundation, meaning from the base of this wall and until the base of the other wall, which was opposite, the entire floor was covered, says Rashi, with the cedar wood. Okay. Verse 8, we're just plowing right through this. Uveso asher yeshev sham chatzer ha'acheres mibeis la'ulam kemaaseh hazeh haya. And the house in which the king would dwell was in the other court, within the porch. And that was of like similar work. Kamaaseh hazeh haya. It was like similar work. Uvayas yaaseh levas paro. This is like the one of the, I don't want to say this, but this is like a little interesting little interjection. Yeah, it's not purely architectural. So for a guy like me, well, I'm all over this. And the house which he would make for Paro's daughter, Asher Lakach Shlomo, whom Solomon had taken for a wife, Ka'ulam Hazeh. The house which he made for her, it was like this porch. We're going to see in a moment that the commentaries are going to say that there were, we're going to see in a minute, the Malbim is going to say it in a minute, that there were eight sections built. I mean, there's a lot of description going on over here. There's a lot of like little, you know, places, and it's all going to be laid out for us in a moment. But for right now, we're being told, among many things, that he built a house for Bas Paro. Why? He liked her a lot. We're going to see that right now. Uveso she yeshev sham, and the house where he might dwell. This is Rashi and the Ralbag, referring to a complete residence in which he could both eat and sleep there. This was the house mentioned at the beginning of the chapter. Remember the very beginning, we kind of blasted through it in English, just to give us a little bit of continuity. You see in the opening verses, he built his house 13 years, and he finished all his house. And he built the house of the forest of Lebanon. That's one construction after the other. So his residence, that's where he ate, that's where he slept, that was his place of living. And that was the house that was described in the opening verse of our chapter. And what about this? What about within the porch? Chatzer acheres mibeis la'ulam, within the porch. This house, this porch area was also a house, and that was situated inward from the porch of the house of the forest of Lebanon in the other court, entering the palace grounds. You know what? It would just be so nice if we had some picture. But I don't have a picture handy. Maybe there's something on the web. But all I know is that there's one building within another building, and it leads to another building, porches leading to houses, to porches, and other constructs. And that was Rashi and the Metzudah. And that was Kemaaseh Hazeh Haya. It was of like similar work. Like the work of the porch of judgment, where the Sanhedrin sat. The floors were covered with cedar. I'm getting the impression that just about everything that was being made over here was covered up with cedar wood, and that's the Ralbag and the Metzudah. And the house which he would make, Uvayas Yaaseh, and this is going to be for the Bas Paro, he planned to make a house for the daughter of Paro, says Rashi. Why her? Why Bas Paro only? He was married to many a wife. Because of all his wives, Shlomo held her in the highest esteem. So says the Rabbeinu Yeshaya
other wives sleep?
So where did his other wives sleep? Where were they living on a day-to-day basis? And he had Well, okay, there's a question. Mrs. Burrell is asking a appropriate question. Do I have an answer when I suggest that at the very outset, at the very beginning of his married life, he was married to one woman, Bas Paro, maybe two at most, and then the other thousand came along the course of time. But at the very moment, but then again, then how do you make sense out of that footnote? Of all his wives, he liked her the best.
Yeah.
According to Rabbeinu Yeshaya, he had a choy, he had a harem. And of all of them, he liked Bas Paro. So he builds her a special house. Now, what about the other ones? Mrs. Burrell, I wish I had a good answer. Well, my brother's going to give us an idea.
I don't know how to answer, but I want to point out one thing. The Yasser is in the tense that's usually thought of as a future tense that he will make. It's true that that is not the entire semantic range of the tense. It's actually the imperfect tense, as you know very well. But Balabatas, as they say, is a future tense. So Rashi, and I don't remember if you mentioned Rashi or not, Ubayas Asher takes the future tense aspect very concretely. Allah Belipo Lassos Baisu Baisu. So this was not even anything built at that particular time. It was something he decided to do later on. So it would not be very easy to say that he might have been married only to Bas Paro at that moment in time. Later he took in the larger retinue of wives, because we don't know when he built this.
Thank you. And obviously what's troubling Rashi, as we say in the yeshivas, what's bothering Rashi, Rabbi Burrell, everything hit on the head? It's this imperfect tense that the author of the scripture could have given it to us in the perfect, completed tense, theoretically, you know, Uvayas Asol of Asparo, Vayaseh, Bayas Labana, and he made that, and he did it already. He already completed it. He made her a house because he liked her. But you're being introduced to this verb, and it's in this future tense, this imperfect tense, and the question is why? Why doesn't the author just tell us right here, right now, that he built her when he built her? And the answer is, says Rashi, because he hasn't yet built it. He has not yet built it. Allah Baribo Lasos Bias Lavas Paro. It hit him in the head. You know what? I like her. I like her a lot. I like her more than others. I'm going to make her a special construction, and it's going to be hers. She'll get the special place. And that's the reason why the author of Scripture is giving it to us in this imperfect tense, because he has not yet even built it. It's going to eventually happen. Wow. Okay, so I thought that he already built it. No, Lav Dafka, says Rashi, it's first trickling into his mind that he's going to build it for her in the future. Shkach to Rebola for that.
I think Malcolm, as I just said, the Malcolm, wants to get the best of both worlds. The Malcolm says the bias is set, and he will or could make a house. The Acharei Gemar HaBinyanim, after he completed the other structures, his Chilasos, Bias of Asparo Gautam Tetsuma, that he began to make it. See, so I think he doesn't want to commit himself to, was it completely in the future? Then why is it mentioned over here? Or was it completely in the past, along with the others? Why was it in the future or in perfect tense? So I think he's really deliberately speaking very smoothly to, you know, get out of it, basically.
Well done. Thank you for looking at the Malbim, Mishkayach. Excellent. Well, this is a lot more than we than we can usually get out of the architectural stuff, so I'm glad we're spending a little bit of time on that. Like this porch, Shkayach, like this porch, Ka'ulam Hazer, like this porch, Shlomo building this for this woman, like this porch, like the work of this porch, and says Rashi, here we go again, the floors are made out of cedar. Says Rashi, the Rabag, and the Metzuda. And now the Malbim tells us, according to our Judaica press, now the Malbim brings it all home and tells us about a grand total of eight constructions, eight buildings, and it's really great. Listen to this. There were in all eight sections built. Can we name them? The king's residence, I guess that's number one. And before it, the great court, because I'd call that two. And before it, the house of the forest of Lebanon. That was at the very beginning of the chapter. Three. And before it, the porch of pillars. That's four. And another porch before that. That makes five. And the pillars with the jousts, sorry, the joists, and the pillars with the joists before them, is that six? And then the porch for the throne, seven. And finally, the porch of judgment, where the Sanhedrin presumably sat, and that makes eight. And there are your eight constructions according to the Malbim. So that's good. Start for that. Pasuk Tes. We just go swimming along. Kol Eile, Avanim, Yakaros, Kemidos, Gazis, Migororos, Bamegera, Mibayas, Umichutz. All these were made of Avanim Yakaros, precious stones. Kemidos gazis, according to the measures, kemidos, according to the measures of gazis, of cut up stone, hewn stones, megororos, which were sawed and cut, by megera, with a saw, mibayis umichutz, from within and without, umimasad, Ad hatzefachos, and from the masad, what does that sound like? Mosad, right? From the yesod, and they're going to translate umi masad, and from the foundation, ad hatzefachos, until the coping. Now this is getting into English that even I don't know. I barely know the word joist, and I can know cedar planks. And things like that. But coping, oh my. But you know what? Stay with me, because the word tfachos obviously sounds like the word tefach, and it's going to sort of kind of mean that. So stay with us and don't get lost. Stick around. Here we go. Umi masad ad tfachos, umi chutz ad hechotzer hagedola. And from the outside until the great court. Arachotzer Hagedola, until the great court. Boy, you know, I would just give anything for a really good depiction of this. I would really enjoy that. Did he say we should get Michael Moltinsky to do this for us? Somebody should. And just to the best that they can, try to render this into something that's usable. You know, what is it worth to us, money-wise, to hire that guy, anybody, and just give us a depiction? I think it could be great. Very, very useful. Here we go. Verse 9 in the translation and the comments on the bottom and the footnote, and on page 67 on the right-hand side, verse 9. All these were of precious stones. Kalela Avanim Yakaros. All of these structures, says Rashi in the translation, all of these structures which he built, like the house of Hashem, like his own palace, and the house of judgment, and the house of Pasparo, or the daughter of Pharaoh, and their courts, the stones used for them were made heavy. Says Rashi, Kola Avanim Ha'ela Asuyim Kvedos. They are heavy stones. Oh, I thought that we're talking about sapphire, and that's what I thought, like really super-duper expensive stone.
So that's the whole point, that it was sapphire, and if you name the other one, with the dimensions of a normal stone. You know, a normal hewn stone is humongous or sizable, right?
Right.
And can you imagine, says the Baal HaTanakh, right, the ocean, the amount of wealth that was invested in there, where the rubies, the sapphires, and so on, the diamonds would have to be the size.
Oh,
you only have a granite or whatever.
Sorry?
Can you even find them that way?
Unbelievable.
If you can have somebody in 1000 or so BCE build a throne with at least like a chazal with animals, fake animals, right? Carved animals, that as soon as you go on the step where the animals are, the animals start to become alive, quasi, right, because of some mechanism. So you can find, you know, when I read you, you know, all kinds of wondrous things that presumably.
Now I got the pshat. Kol Eila Avon Yikaras Kemidos Gazis. These were precious stones according to the measures of cut stones. Cut stones are big. Have you ever seen one? They're big. In Jerusalem, I mean, the later ones that you see in the Kotel area, I mean, some of those are just very, very, very large stones. So you're saying over here that these are sapphire and ruby and so on. These are the precious stones, and they are humongous cut precious stones. I get it. I wasn't even registering. Thank you very much. All these which he built, the stones of them were made heavy. According to Targum Yonason and the Radak, others say they were precious and of exceptional quality.
Mida could mean size. Mida could mean size or can mean quality. So depending on which one you take it here, that would lead you to a different shot.
Either way, we're talking about some fabulously expensive material being used over here. And they were cut according to the measures of hewn stone. Kemidos gazis megororos b'megera. Literally, according to the measures of hewn, of cut. Rashi therefore explains this was, quote, according to the measures of cut or hewn stone. Meaning, says Rashi, and the Radak and the Rabag and the Metzudas follow, there was one accepted, A-C-C-E-P-T-E-D, accepted, there was one understood and generally accepted measurements for hewn stone in that country, and these were cut that way. These precious stones were cut according to that measurement that everybody understood to be the measurement of the place. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Hard to believe. And megororos b'megera, they were sawed off with saws, because a saw cuts stone very smoothly, in contrast to a makeva, a sledgehammer, which does not cut very smoothly, says the Radak and the Ralbag. And of course, that is so true regarding a sledgehammer. You're going to get quite an uneven and whatever, you're gonna get, I don't know what you're going to get with a sledgehammer. It won't be pretty. But with a saw, you're going to get much, much, much more exacting and beautiful cut.
Interesting that this is the article that I had to pick up from the Shout Stone Tanakh. I wasn't even consciously aware that it exists. I've seen it. It does not translate the word as saw, but it says that filed smooth with a file.
With a file.
Why it changed it to a file, I'm not sure, but that emphasizes the smoothness.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's true. That is true.
But the reports of those that I've seen deal with it seems to say it's a saw.
Mm-hmm. And there's no problem over here, apparently, about using a metal saw, because we're not dealing with the base of Mikdash-oriented materials anymore. Now it's just private homes somewhere in Jerusalem. So you've got a Bezdin here, and you got a base Mishpat there, and you got a private residence here. But nobody is so concerned about getting that worm into the action, which we were talking about months back, and we talked about cutting a smooth stone for a base of Mikdash, where you can't use any metal product. Okay, and from the foundation up to the coping, u'mimasad ad hatefachos, from the foundation to the coping, says Rashi, in English, this building was made in the height of cut or hewn stones from the foundation until the highest beam. This building was made in the height of cut up stones from the foundation until the highest beam. Excuse me, wow. And from the foundation, umimasad, and you know that Rashi's going to be on that. The word masad is derived from the expression yesod, a foundation. So apparently we've got this biblical term, masad, coming from yesod. And what's the famous Israeli term for their CIA?
Mossad.
The Mossad. And that's the term that we use for institution. It means institution, right? And that's what the word Mossad means in Yeshivish Hebrew. Now, obviously, it's used in Israel, too. So you go to Cleveland. Hold on. I'm going to get this right. In Cleveland, they created a cheder to the right.
A Mossad.
Yeah. Thank you. They have a cheder to the right of the Cleveland Hebrew Academy.
Right.
And what's the name of the cheder? Moses HaToyer.
Right.
So you ask the children over there, where do you study? What yeshiva are you in? Moistos. I'm in Moistos. And that means institutions. What do you got, Rebecca?
No, I'm just thinking how a former professor at UC Cincinnati, a very old friend of mine, I've lost contact a little bit to Hillel Yarmouf. He went on for that. He moved for some years to Cleveland, was like an education consultant there. When he gave off life tenure here to be, he was a cheder rebbe back over there, and he gave up English lit here to be cheder rebbe. But anyway, in his middle age, so. He also did various consulting work there, and he was the editor-in-chief, probably, I would imagine it was a group effort, of a series that I'm told made a big hit in the very firm schools, but also some of the Christian schools I'm told were interested. He had, I think, like for the middle or upper elementary years, a whole series for their secular studies, for their English lit, where he had very interesting, I mean, the best of American literature and similar things, you know, for children with questions and explanations. And the main thing of that made that unique was what was not in there. If there was anything that would be even remotely inappropriate by the opinions of people who send their kids there.
He bowed their eyes.
Right, exactly. I mean, I didn't check. If we bounderize the actual text, I said, bounderize is where you take a text and take this out. It might have been that he simply selected text that didn't need to be bounderized. Plus, no religion of any sort was mentioned. Because, you know, if you're learning from the early morning till 3 o'clock, you're learning Torah, and you have 2 hours in late afternoon, you know, you don't need, you know what I'm saying? There's no point in confusing issues. You see, that was the idea. So it could be sold, and I don't know how well it did catch on to some of these Christian schools that where they say quite impressed. But so that's a little connection, most of us to from Cincinnati.
That's good. Is it to say that he went to teach in that school?
I'm not sure it was that school. I mean, I didn't. He told me he went to be a cheder rebbe. He told me. I'm assuming it was there. And then he became a consultant. He still, I heard, he called him Crafty and Kappa Guta. I heard he still, unless I asked, he'll go there every summer.
And what's his name?
Hillel, I knew him originally, his name was Hillel Yarmouf.
Hillel Yarmouf.
But that doctor, he's Professor Hillel Yarmouf. Yeah, he made an impression here.
Wow.
Later I can tell you the other thing. But, yeah. He did a tremendous job. Him and Rabbi Cohen were my two biggest Baba Batim where I ate Shabbos and Yom Tov when I was in Bachelor.
Thank you for that. I never heard of the man. Fascinating. And when did he move out?
He was half here and half in Cleveland, and he moved back out of sabbatical and half here about 1990, very approximately.
His house was for sale. When we were buying our house.
It was right down the street from us. We looked at it, up the street from us. Where East Lawn becomes, just as East Lawn, but almost where it becomes London.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was Cleveland, that where are they now? They think Lakewood maybe. We had a son married and stayed on for quite some time here. We're 30 years gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, they were one of the main from families holding the fort.
Oh. Good. See that? Meisters.
Yeah.
Meisters. And they've got a high school, I think, also for girls. I don't know about for boys. I'm not sure about that.
Yes.
And what's fascinating, I think I'm allowed to divulge this. A couple of years ago, I went to Columbus. There was a state of Ohio day of pro-choice vouchers and so on, and I was invited to go, so I went. And there in Columbus, there were kids from all over the state, and they were cheering on the various speakers and so on. Well, there was the Hebrew Academy High School for Girls in one part of the lawn, and then there was the Moistos Girls High School, also of Cleveland, in a different part of the lawn, and they don't really kind of like, you know, it wasn't like they were like hanging with each other. They were like in two different distinct places. It's not like they said, oh, look, guys are from Cleveland. Let's go over and say hello. They're our neighbors. No, they were like, you know, in two very different places. I'm not speaking Lashon Hara. I'm just observing that they were like, you know, not exactly, they weren't mishing. It was like Pesach.
Rabbi Wein's yeshiva, there was not a Rabbi Wein's yeshiva. Rabbi Wojcinski's yeshiva had some spare room, and I think it was, which group, was it Slaughter or what it was? No, Sarah Stolen. Stolen had a fire in there, and their school or something. They needed a building. They needed space, and then they had the space. So I'm confused with two stories. It wasn't similar. It didn't happen. They did pick up space, but they did see each other. But the other time, Rabbi Wein's yeshiva allowed some of the space to be used by, I think it was Bubba.
Mm.
And one of the conditions was that all boys, both, like a very big physical barrier, should be no mingling.
Wow.
Because the Bubba shouldn't be corrupted.
Right.
Absolutely, there are different groups. I wish them all alone. Mm.
Me too. We don't want any corruption going on over here. God forbid. Umi Masad. Masad is from Yesod, says Rashi. And the coping, Ad Hatzifachos, up and from the foundation, up the coping, or until the coping. What is that? So they're going to bring down a Rashi initially, and then a Radak. And here's how it goes. The coping, Ad Hatzifachos, means the highest beam. The highest beam, as the Pasuk says in Isaiah chapter 48, verse 13, my right hand has spanned or had spanned the heavens. The word tifcha, describing the heights of the heavens. Now, I don't have the Isaiah in front of me. Rabbi, if you might have a full Tanakh, I don't know. Maybe you do. I'd be curious to see. I guess the word tifcha is coming up over there in Isaiah 48:13. Yeshaya 48:13, the word tifcha describes the heights of the heavens. And therefore the word tfachot over here is going to mean the highest beam.
In 48?
Yeah, 13.
Oh, yes. After Jesus got Eretz, and Hashem saw Eretz, we need Am I right? Tipcha shamayim. It looks like a verb. Let's see what he says in English. This one. My right hand has measured out the heavens. So this one says measured out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's pretty good, right? Sure. Thanks for looking that up. So yes, certainly over there it's going to be a verb. My right hand has spanned the heavens. According to Art Scroll, it has measured the heavens. And the word tipcha describes the heights of the heavens, according to our rabbi and editor over here. And now we see Rashi, that tefach was also the name. Well, that was a Rashi. Now we're going to hear a Radak. Tefach was also the name given to the stone upon which the beam was placed. It was the name given to the stone upon which the beam was placed because it usually protruded a tefach beyond the wall. Because that stone upon which the beam was placed protruded a tefach's measure beyond the wall. So says the Radak. And that is perhaps the reason why you see the word tefach or tfachot over here in our pasuk. Okay, Yishkayach. U'michutz ad ha-chatzer ha-gedola. And from the outside until the great court. And from the outside, says Rashi, on the outside, the entire length of the walls were made of these stones, these precious stones, these fabulously expensive stones, which we said a moment ago, sapphire and ruby and such. And these stones comprised the entire length of the walls until the Chatzer HaGadola, until the great court. You can well imagine what was going on over here. This was wealth on a fabulous level. Just an incredible thing. Pasuk Yud. Umi yusad avanim yakaros avanim gedolos. And the foundation was of precious stones. The miyusad, the foundation, avanim yakaros, was comprised of precious stones. Avanim gedolos, big stones, big precious stones. Avnei eser amos, stones of 10 cubits. Avnei shmona amos, and stones of 8 cubits. What does that mean? Well, let's see what we have from Rashi and the Radak and the Matsuda. Here we go. In the English, bottom page 68, and the foundation was of great stones. And the foundation, which was in the ground, was of stones greater than the measurement of cut stones. Now, we spend a little bit of time talking about cut stones, which were going to be visible to the human eye. They're going to be above ground. And they were big and beautiful and precious. Well, guess what? Now I'm being told that the foundational stones in the ground were even bigger. They were bigger. And I understand that they were also avanim yukaros, also precious. So now I'm getting the idea that big, enormous stones were put in the ground and they weren't even visible. And it didn't matter to King Solomon because they were just big and beautiful and he could afford them. Wow, wow, wow. Try to figure out that. Try to imagine that. Ms. Bro, what do you got?
Boy, all your treasure, right? So it's hidden in the ground.
It's hidden in the ground. When are we going to dig this up, Mrs. Brewer? When, I ask, when are we going to be able to dig
up? Archaeologists are working on it, right?
Exactly. Remarkable stuff. So the foundation in the ground was of stones even bigger than the cut stones we learned about earlier. So says Rashi. Although the stones of the foundation were like the stones used for the walls, as mentioned in verse 9, that was a reference to the quality of the stone, not the size. That was a reference to the quality of the stone, not the size of the stone. Our sages say further in Tumet 26a, these stones projected inward to the Beis HaMikdash, and they were used as resting places for older Kohanim, whereas the younger Kohanim would rest on the ground.
Wait a minute. Are we talking about
Shlomo's
house, or are we talking about
the
Beis HaMikdash?
I don't know, but I'm going to finish this. Since, since no beds were allowed into the Beis HaMikdash, so they had to sit somewhere where they got conked out. So young priests, young Kohanim would sit on the ground. Older Kohanim would sit on these stones.
And there would be, there'd be projecting inwards and be as a resting place for older Kohanim, because there, there's no beds allowed. You can't have people lounging around. It ain't sleep or whatever, you know, easy mattress, whatever, what's the name of those places? You know, sleep easy or whatever. You go into these stores and you have mattresses. First thing I want to do when I go into these mattress stores, I want to test them out. I immediately get tired. And I got to just, I want to conk out. I mean, the invitation to sleep is immense. Says Rashi, I'm reminding you, that was just the Matsuda, there's no beds in the Beis HaMikdash. Nobody's sacking out and taking a nap.
Okay, you want to take a rest, you sit on the ground, or you sit on a stone, but nobody's sleeping on a bed. Now, Mrs. Berlin, what was your question? Are we talking about the temple, or are we talking about Shlomo's constructions? Well,
we had finished the construction of the Beis HaMikdash.
That's what I thought. Wait a second. Oh my goodness, I don't even know what to say anymore, because our sages say further that these stones, which seem to be part of his house, they projected inward to the temple, and they were used as resting places. So clearly, according to this, I mean, what else? Kohanim are hanging out in the temple. They're not hanging out in his house. So it's got to be that now we're switching over somehow. Now we're talking about the Beis HaMikdash. In the Gemara and Tumah, we're talking about the Beis HaMikdash. I wish I had a better, more coherent narrative than this, but all I got is what I got. And it's not so great, but that's what I got. And that was verse 10. And we continue apace. This chapter is 45 psukim, just like this. Just like the last 10. We got to cut through this. If we ever want to get back into the role of narrative, we got to. I don't want to daven up, but we got to daven up. I get it. But I mean, it's just, you know, we're doing it slowly, and if there's something interesting, we see it. Umilamala avanim yakaros kemidos guzis va'ores. And above were precious stones. Umilamala avanim yakaros. And above there were precious stones. Kemidos guzis va'ores. According to the measures of cut stones and cedars. According to the measure or measurements of hewn cut stones and cedars, which were big. So Rashi on 11, and above were precious stones, and above the stones used for the foundation. And above the stones which were used for the foundation were another batch of precious stones, cut to precise measurements, until the coping, as he mentioned above. I see. There's precious stones all over the place, and cedars, as Targum Yonason explains. He covered it with boards of cedar, as said before, and it was covered with cedar. So you have floors covered with cedar. Maybe you even have, if you have precious stones covered with cedar, that would really kind of knock out the need for the precious stone if you cover them up with wood. I sure hope he wasn't covering up those precious stones with cedar. He was hiding it. He covered it with boards of cedar. Please don't tell me that. Please don't tell me you're covering up stuff.
The ones that were sticking out into
the Beis HaMikdash. Oh my! I'm hoping he didn't really do this. Anyway, but it says that he did. Pasuk Yud Beis V'Chatzer Hagedola Saviv Shlosha Turim Guzis the Tur Kirusos Arazim. So let's try to break that down. V'Chatzer Hagedola and the Great Court Saviv roundabout. Now we're getting into the great court. This is like the last of the, well, I shouldn't say that, but it's one of the buildings, the Chatzar HaGadola, and Saviv, round about this great court, Shlosha Turim Gazis, was of three rows of cut-up stones, the Tur Krusos, and a row of Arazim, cut beams of cedar, the Lachatzar Beis Hashem, Hapanimis, and for the inner court of the house of Hashem, Ula Ulam Habayis, and for the porch of the house. So you had cut stones and a row of cut beams of cedar for the inner court of the house of Hashem and for the porch of the house. So you had these gorgeous stones and you had a lot of cedar. 12, let's see the footnote on 12. And the great court round about, but the Chatzar HaGadola Saviv, the great court encircled all the king's houses. The great court encircled all the king's houses, so says the Mitzvot David. And it was Shlosha Turim, was of three rows of hewn stones. The wall around the great court was made of three tiers of cut stone and one tier of cut cedar wood on them, and continued in this order until the top of the wall. So says Rashi in the Mitzvot David. The prophet writes over here was very brief in his reference to and description of the royal palace and the house which Shlomo built for Bas Paro. Since there was nothing spectacular in its construction except for the stones and the cedar. On the other hand, he was most lengthy in the details of the house of the forest of Lebanon due to the pillars and the windows and the size, which portrayed Shlomo's greatness and his wealth. And so says the Abarbanel. And for the inner court of the house of Hashem and for the porch of the house. These two were built of three tiers of stone and one tier of cedar, as was the wall of the great court. Impossible to imagine what's going on over here. The Redactor al-Bag and the Mitzvot. I'll say that. These structures had one thing in common. They had no ceiling and were therefore reinforced with cedar to hold them. There was no ceiling. What does that even mean?
Okay, so here we go. So what beam are we talking about? It was up to the beam. Up to what beam if there's no ceiling?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some kind of joist, some kind of connecting piece of wood of some sort.
A platform.
Where you had, and which you were doing the job of, that word, what was that word, coping, or what was that
coping?
Word? Coping. This one had ceiling.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Anat Fachos until the ceiling.
Well,
that makes the most sense.
The structures had no ceiling, or the court didn't happen.
These structures that we've been talking
about. Was it the village? Oh,
yeah. You know what? I think so. But let me just see if he confirms that all the way in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just see if he has a... hold on.
He usually does.
Yeah. Let me just see this. I don't see it either.
What about the beginning? Before the...
Well, let's see. I don't think that it's going to be in the beginning. Maybe it is. I don't see
right.
And Adair Silvio explained. I would have thought the growth. We continue on. We have a minute or so. 5 minutes. Here we go. Let's do something with that. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayishlach HaMelech Shlomo, Vayikach Eschiram Mitzor. Solomon, King Solomon sent for and took Chiram from Tyre. Is that the famous Chiram of Tyre?
Yeah, Chiram of Tyre.
Not necessarily. Am I crazy? Take a look at the next. Oh, let's see the footnote also. This was not Chiram the king, but the name of a skilled worker.
Oh, wow.
Just as a Barbanel and the Masud. And how do you know that? Because the Pasuk Yudalid 14, let's read 14. Ben Isha Almanahu, this guy Chiram from Tyre, same name, same city, he was the son of a widow, Mimate Naphtali, from the tribe of Naphtali. V'aviv Ish Tzori, his father was a man from the town of Tyre. Choresh Nechoshes, he was a coppersmith. V'imaleya Sachochma, he was filled with wisdom. Exactly right, right. V'es HaTavuna, and understanding. V'es HaDa'as, and knowledge, and know-how, and skill. Lasos Kol Malacha Banachoshes, to do and work all works in copper. Vayavo el HaMelech Shlomo, so King Solomon went towards him, Vayas Eskol Malachto. And he came to King Shlomo and he did all his work. Well, let's see if we can, there's a lot over here in the footnote.
When John Smith, you know what I mean?
Right. So let's see what we can do in the footnote and we'll end it. He was a widow's son. According to Barbanel, he was most likely unmarried and was therefore with his mother in order to console her in her widowhood. This fact increased the difficulties of parting, says the Abarbanel. Mimate Naphtali, from the tribe of Naphtali, he was of the tribe of Naphtali, but his mother was from the Shevet Dan. So it says in 2 Chronicles. And they sojourned in Tyre, in Tzor, because Tzor is really way up north. And he's from Tyre, and she's from Dan.
The pastor here looks like he was at the battle of a Jewish. But I understand it is that not being
told. Just we're not being told very much about him, right?
Right.
His father was a man of Tyre.
Was Tyre technically Eretz Yisrael? I don't think so.
Uh-huh. Well, let's see. What do they say over here?
You don't know, it's Tyre Christian. Maybe.
All I know is that there's a Tyre all the way up north.
Sure.
That's in Asher. Does that help us out? According to this, in Shevet. Oh, in Shevet
Asher.
Asher.
Oh.
In Shevet Asher.
Okay, is it by the coast? Yes.
Yeah.
Right, so, you know, wasn't it one of the five Sinai Plishtim? In other words, it was secondary Tzor, but Plishtim occupied as many, you know, at certain times.
They have Plishtim down here in the south.
Plishtim were
and
looking very
small.
So as they know, Seagull, Tzor, Gath, Ashkelon, Ekron, I think, the capital cities of Mesa.
Yeah, but those others are down.
Are you saying, is there a Tzor there?
Ashkelon.
I only see one Tzor, one
Tzor. All the way up at the top.
All the way up. I think the police were north and south. But I don't know. I'm ignorant. They were not native of the area. They were sea people.
Like Phoenicians?
Right. They came to different places.
Right. We're going to read up. And we find a striking parallel, he writes, in the construction of both the Mishkan in the desert and the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. The same two tribes collaborate in the work. In the Mishkan, it was Bezalel, the tribe of Yehuda, and Eliab, the son of Ahisamach, of the tribe of Dan. In the construction of the Beis HaMikdash too, Hiram was from the tribe of Dan on his mother's side, and Shlomo... What's that?
I thought that was
right. Yeah, that's what I thought. And Shlomo, the son of David, from the tribe of Yehuda. So says Psik de Rabasi. He was a man from Tzor, Tyre. He resided there a long time, says the Metzudas David. He's a coppersmith. Okay?
He is his father. Because the Pasuk, obviously he mentioned it, the Pasuk looks like the coppersmith refers to, I believe, Ish Tzori Chorish Nechoshim.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay.
Some of the sons followed the same profession as his father.
Okay, let's see what it says. He was a Chorish Nechoshim, a coppersmith. The common word for this is Uman. It matters very little, if at all, the exact occupation of his father, other than to inform us that a son is obligated to learn and engage himself in his father's trade. So this is the Gemara in Arachin 16b. Since his father was deceased, Shlomo took the son to replace him, knowing that he was capable and of equal skill. So says the Radak. And he was filled with the wisdom and understanding and skill. These, says Rashi, these are the three tools with which the universe was created. As it's stated in Proverbs, God by wisdom founded the earth, by understanding he established the heavens, and by his knowledge the depths were broken up. A pasuk in Mishle, chapter 3, verse 19. With these same three, the Beis HaMikdash was built. Chochma, Tevuna, and Da'as, which we see in our pasuk. Okay, Lasos Kol Melacha Banachoshes, to work all works in copper. In Second Chronicles, he's described as skillful to work in gold, silver, copper, iron, stone, and in timber, purple, blue, in fine linen, and in crimson, and to do whatever is set before him. It's without doubt that he possessed all his attributes. But since Shlomo had no need for any but his skill in copper, there was no need to mention the other skills that he had. So says the Radak. And finally, the Malbim, and we'll end with this, the Malbim maintains that Shlomo originally had the services of the father of this Hiram, whose name, incidentally, was the same. The elder Hiram was skilled in all those trades mentioned in Second Chronicles. He passed away, however, after 7 years, and then Shlomo sent for the son, who was skilled only in the works of copper. The wordings in the text, both here and in Second Chronicles, seem to bear out his interpretation. And see the Malbim here for details.
Okay, but when we were dealt with the building of the Beit HaMikdash, it was Hiram from Lebanon who was getting us the wood.
That's what I thought.
Just throw it out there.
Well, we know, but what are we adding? What do you say?
He was not come off him.
What do we start to say? The question, again, we reference it. Was this the same Hiram as the famous King Hiram? That,
no, and the answer is no, but his father was knowledgeable,
right.
And the son is you know, taking over the
no, it's
job.
Like, it's like... yeah.
Everybody's anybody's named Hiram.
Well,
if you want to work, you better be named Hiram. I'm gonna let everybody go, and I want to. That's right. Exactly right. I want to thank Rabbi Mr. Bill for coming out tonight. Shkach to all those who are back in business. We're all back on track, God willing. Let's meet again next week, Mr. Shem, on Monday for Eimah Bonim Smeicha. At the moment at 1 o'clock, until we may switch it, who knows, but we'll let you know. And God willing, Tanakh Tuesdays continues on Tuesday night at 7:30. Wishing everybody a very healthy, productive new year. Hopefully you enjoyed the Chagim and all the Yom Tovim. Enjoy in the best of health. And God willing, we'll see everybody next week. Shulblock is signing out. from Gulf Atlantic Synagogue. Thanks so much for joining us. Hatzlacha and bracha this week.